Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, what are the impact of the awakening in the Muslim states on European countries?
Earlier this year, the Arab world was rocked by popular uprisings for basic human rights and democracy. As a result, the world has seen changes in some countries, and others are still going through their struggles. The wave of revolution swept through the whole Arab region and has made its way to European countries. Hundreds of thousands of people from all over Spain gathered in their city's main squares in protest that many are associating with the revolution sweeping the Middle East and North Africa. However, the main difference is that Arab people are risking their lives while protesting. In this episode of Islam and Life, we will investigate what is the impact of awakening in the Muslim states on European countries.
Yes, it's an important question. We heard what was happening in Greece, in Spain, all this, you know, protest and people asking for reform. At the same time, and before that, of course, in Tunisia, in Egypt, in Libya, in Bahrain, in Yemen, all these countries were witnessing, you know, uprisings and people risking their life, and some of them were being killed and tortured, while the whole protests were non-violent. And we know the relationship between the European countries and some of the dictators before, for decades, they were supporting the Egyptian dictator or the Tunisian dictator. They are still not clear in their support or the positioning with Syria, not clear, and not covering, for example, what is happening in Bahrain. So what are the reactions and which kind of impact this uprisings have on Europe, on the ordinary citizens, on the governments? These are important questions, while at the same time we are feeling that something is also happening in some European countries when it comes to resisting the government's policy, economy, and the situation being quite difficult on the economic side. Well, to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Mr. Robby Packer, a political analyst and a journalist who witnessed the Spanish Revolution in Barcelona. Thank you for being with us. Let me start with this first question about the uprisings in Tunisia, in Egypt, and all the countries that I was mentioning. How these uprisings were understood and perceived from Europe?
Well, they were certainly unexpected. Which actually led to a certain amount of embarrassment for many European politicians. We noticed the immediate changes to the French cabinet after the uprisings in Tunisia and a distinct change in policy towards the Middle East from them. We can also see the attitude of David Cameron. He was caught in Saudi Arabia selling weapons to the Saudi Arabians while these uprisings were going on. And it later came out that many of the weapons used to put down the protests in Tunisia were British made, which led to a lot of shame and a lot of embarrassment for many of our politicians. Mm. With regards to people risking their lives, I mean, that's always going to be an inspiration. Young men and women, you know, putting their lives on the line for these principles of freedom and justice is certainly an inspiration for everyone throughout the world. What is a little bit more difficult to analyse is how much of an inspiration, how much of an influence were the actions of these young people in the Middle East.
So you would say that for the governments, the European governments, it was quite an embarrassment because they were supporting some of the dictators and they were in, you know, collaborating for decades with Egypt, Tunisia, and other countries. Is there a difference beyond being an inspiration for some segments of the European societies? Is there a difference in the way the ordinary citizens were dealing with this? Because it was unexpected, yes. But the perception is, oh, it's positive because they are freeing themselves from the dictators. But at the same time, lots of questions and people being very cautious, not knowing how to position themselves while all these people were asking for more justice and more dignity.
I mean, throughout society, it took everyone by surprise. Social movements, I believe, took a lot of inspiration from this, and we could say that it was in this way a significant influence in what we see now in Spain and in Greece. For example, if these people throughout the Arabic world can do it under these conditions of severe oppression, when their lives are at risk, then surely we can do it.
So you would say that, for example, what is happening in Greece and what is happening in Spain is influenced by what was happening in Tunisia and Egypt, that there is a connection here. But still, if we analyze now what is happening in Spain and what is happening in Tunisia, it's not at all the same. And even in Greece, while they were resisting the new policies that are coming under the European authority and the European policies, it's still not... You know, this perception that we are freeing, they are freeing themselves from dictatorship or from a system where there is no freedom.
I mean, throughout the Arab world, the people there were fighting against something very tangible. I mean, what's more real than the iron fist of repression? But in Europe, what we're up against is something a lot more shapeless, a lot more, I mean, it changes face, it changes color. It's very difficult to understand what we're actually fighting for. And I do believe that this is a reason why movements, from my personal experience, movements in Spain are starting to lose a bit of steam, because they certainly know what they're against. But what they propose to replace that with is another question. I think we should maybe err on the side of caution when making comparisons and looking for differences, because in my opinion, fundamentally, these social movements are the same. They're part of a international global process. In this globalized world, can we really talk about a national protest which is influenced by specific national factors? We can see in both Spain and the Arab world that worsening economic conditions have slowly but surely led the people there in both countries, both regions, to realize that it's a political elite, their politicians, who respond better to the demands of international capital than they do to their own people.
It's quite interesting, because you are focusing on the economic factors mainly, and the social situation, the economic situation of the people facing unemployment, and this exactly the way it happened in Tunisia, with Mohamed Bouazizi just self-immolating himself, because it was an economic reason. It was not a political reason, not a religious reason. While at the same time, what we are getting from the discourse on the Arab uprising is the Islamic factor that you are not mentioning in your analysis. Does it mean that for you it's changing something, that your perception or the perception of ordinary Europeans is about Islam is changing or not? Because you are not referring to this, all the discussion that we have in the West mainly is about the political system, democratization and more freedom, while you are saying it's not this. These are not the priorities. The priorities are economic factors that we have to analyze, and they are the same. For you, it's the same between this, not exactly the same shape, but the same source.
Yeah, I mean, if it comes from the same source, these factors are going to manifest themselves in different ways according to the situation in which they encounter themselves. In the Arabic world, that was in the form of IMF loans and European development loans with conditions attached, which led to an increase in food prices.
Which happened one and a half year before the uprisings, in fact, yes.
Exactly, an increase in unemployment. Basically, if we look at the case of Spain, it has been speculation on the property markets that has led to, and also laws against the labor movement and against unionization, which have led to a stagnation of wages and an increase in the living costs. Obviously, there are slight differences, but also we look at the solution to the politicians to both the factors, both situations as well, which is interesting. In Spain or throughout Europe, the solution proposed by politicians is that austerity cuts. In the Arabic world, we already have Egypt and Tunisia, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, in negotiations with the IMF, and the IMF were proposing the exact neoliberal reforms that were the cause of the social unrest in the first place. So what preoccupies me a lot is whether the revolutions throughout the Arab world lead to some kind of real revolution and not some kind of passive revolution.
What is a real revolution?
Well, if we look at, for example, South Africa, Mbeki, in his talks at the IMF, basically privatized the whole system and made it made the conditions very favorable to capital. But this went completely against the very egalitarian nature of the new South African constitution. We look at Russia when the Berlin Wall fell. Gorbachev just wanted to implement some kind of socialist democracy, maintaining people's social and economic rights. They got rid of him, and Yeltsin came in and deconstructed the whole thing.
What you would suggest is that we need to break with the old system.
Exactly.
Radically. This is a radical change in this. Let me just come back to the question of the reference to Islam, because some are talking about this, the awakening of the Islamic majority country, the Arab world, and you are not at all talking about this. The Islamic factor that is coming with the uprisings, it's not important and wouldn't have, in the future, will not have an impact on the societies, on the understanding?
The Islamic factor is, I believe the revolutions would have happened regardless of religion. The Islamic factor, however, does greatly influence the reaction of the West to these revolutions.
Yes.
If we see in Eastern Europe, when the wall fell, these revolutions, they were embraced wholeheartedly. It was quoted as a victory for free markets and liberal democracy throughout the world. Now we've got Western politicians being a bit more cautious, and this is due to a fear of the Muslim Brotherhood, I believe, and the Islamic movement that an awakening that they represent. This fear...
But you cannot deny that this is happening.
Oh, it's definitely an aspect.
It's an aspect.
Certainly an aspect.
Is it a serious one, according to you, or is this is not the question?
I think that it's
some
serious.
People would,
it's
some,
definitely serious, because what does it represent? It represents a challenge, a direct challenge to the system.
Yes.
We can see its twin, its echo, if you would, in the European revolutions with kind of anti-materialist movements. From my understanding of the Islamic awakening, it is a break from the dominant discourse, which we assume comes with international affairs. It's a break with capital being the be-all and end-all of our societies, and as is the environmentalist and anti-materialist movements, which form a big part of the social movements in Europe today.
So would you suggest that we can find and the impact of the uprisings in the Arab world could be, for the future, a kind of a new relationship between the anti-materialistic trends that we have in Europe? Is this possible, or this? Are you dreaming something that cannot happen? Because at the end of the day, you know, myself, I have been working with some of the people who are calling themselves alter globalization, or new for advocating a new globalization, another globalization. That's fine, but when, as a Muslim, I was involved and talking about, you know, potential common goals, there is a great deal of mistrust. That in fact, what you don't have on the economic side, you may have it on the political side or even the cultural side. So do you think that this could have an impact on a new vision coming from these trends and in Europe and Western or more globally Western countries?
Certainly. That's an interesting avenue to explore, actually, because we generally look at Western diplomatic efforts' impact on the rest of the world. For example, throughout the Middle East, how are these dictators how they are crumbling without Western support. But it will be interesting to see if these new regimes that do like flourish from the post-revolutionary countries. What will their effect be on Europe? Will that we already know that they provided inspiration for European social movements on the left. But we've got a question, where will the change come from? Will these inspired European social movements be able to keep the momentum up and suggest real change? Or will change be forced upon us from the outside when we do not have access to cheap resources?
Yes, it's an interesting question, because at the same time we can see that the challenges are the same. The economic factors are exactly the same. The sources could be also the same. You are talking about the IMF, the World Bank, and this was said even by the President Barack Obama. We are coming to support the revolutions by putting money with these two institutions, and we know what it means. It could mean political independence, but economic new dependency. We all know this. Is it possible? And this is my main question. I'm not sure that what I'm seeing in Europe, when it comes to exactly the point that you are making, Islam is not a problem. They are in majority Muslims, but their concern is about justice, equality, freedom, and autonomy. And don't make it a problem. Still, I can see in some of the movements that they can say to their own government, with you, we have this ethics of life. We don't want, this consumerism. We are resisting this. But still not being able to look beyond the Mediterranean sea to say, okay, we might have people who are coming from a different religion and having the same principles. Do you see this happen? Is this possible, or this is a dream?
I mean, certainly there's a lot of negative perceptions of Islam in the West. I mean,
and especially in the leftist trends as well.
And I, for one, I admit that I'm not immune to it. But I think possibly this is more of a general fear of organized religion rather than Islam itself. Obviously, Islam is portrayed very negatively by our media. But then again, so is fundamentalist Christianity in America, for example. What leftist movements throughout the West are worried about, I think we should be careful to include kind of center-left governments in this, because really they don't really represent these kind of movements. But they do try and be open to Islam, to diversity.
They try to be open, which is a good way to put it. What do you mean by that?
They try to be open in theory, on paper.
Okay.
They completely are. But there is a deep-seated suspicion of organized religion in general.
So how can we solve this? Because at the end of the day, yes, these people were resisting dictatorships, and we were happy with them. It was a very large spectrum, coming from leftists to Islamists, even in Egypt, in all the countries. In Syria is the case now, in Libya, in Bahrain, they are from all the political trends. And still, we are celebrating the movement, resisting the dictatorships, but we are very cautious with some of the trends. How could we improve this situation to have a positive impact on the West, and also on European Muslims who are citizens in Britain, in Spain, in Greece, and still just coming back from Greece? I can see that there is a great deal of suspicion about the Greek citizens being Muslims, because there are too much Muslims to be very good or perceived as good Greek citizens, which is exactly the case everywhere in Europe. Can we do something about that? Do you think that there is something that should be done? Or is this the future?
I mean, by we, you mean Muslims across the world?
Not we, you and me.
You and me, both of us. That would be very easy then.
I'm not sure. This is my question.
For the people throughout the Arabic world,
yes.
They need to build a democracy that's functioning and ensures the rights for every man, woman, and child in those countries. This would be a shining example for the rest of the world, and really go against stereotypes that we have taken really from experiences in Afghanistan, for example. That's one of the most well-known Islamic revolutions was against the Soviets there. And it didn't really turn out so well for human rights. For everyday people like me and you, for people like me, non-Muslim, we need to be accepting, of course, of religions, but also open, and also kind of admit to ourselves that these religions can it doesn't, maybe I don't believe this, but that's what they believe. And
but you think that the uprisings in the Arab countries could help to change this understanding, this negative perception?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the very fact that these Muslims throughout the Arabic world rose up against their dictators changed the perception. I mean, look at the reaction of our leaders before, and they said we didn't expect this. Well, I mean, come on, what do you expect? These are people there, like you and me, and if you don't expect these people to demand freedom and justice, then what is this? This is either out-and-out racism, or this is either brutal real politic, and I suspect it's a mixture between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And so these uprisings, aided by social media, have popularized the image that, no, like, Islamic people throughout the world are just like me and you. They demand freedom, they demand justice in the form of democracy, and we shouldn't have any problem with that.
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion, it's quite interesting is that the fact that what is happening in the Muslim majority countries in the Arab world is helping to get a sense that Islam is, it might be not a hindrance towards democracy and people resisting dictatorship, but quite the opposite. But what you are also saying is that we have to be very cautious not to speak only about politics, but here there are economic factors that in fact are the driving force behind the whole story, and on this the sources, maybe not the methodologies, are the same, and the challenges and the claims coming from the people are the same. One thing that you were just saying now, it's just how do we build trust between movements that are resisting the same economic force but with religious backgrounds or religious reference that are different. It means to go for more knowledge and trust and to be able to work together, which is not exactly what is happening now, but this could be a way forward for these groups to get a better understanding. But it's quite clear that the Arab uprisings help to get a better understanding that Islam and the Muslims are sharing the values of many people in the West and resisting the same oppression when it comes to economy. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here's the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Mr. Rabi Packer. Thank you so much for your presence here, and I hope to see you next week, inshallah.